Welcome back to Season 9 of the HPS Cast. I'm your host, Colbert Cannon. If you're new to the pod, HPS is a global investment firm. We manage just over $100 billion in assets for a broad range of institutional and individual investors. That capital is invested across private credit and public credit strategies. Each week, I sit down with key relationships to, partners of, and friends of the firm to learn from their experience, ask how that experience shapes their current roles, and give insights into HPS and how we operate. So with that, let's bring in our guest. Our guest this week is, as they say, a multi-tool athlete. She runs a venture capital firm, but she's also been a successful entrepreneur and is the author of two New York Times bestselling books in her spare time. She attended Harvard undergrad, and after some time on Wall Street, went back to Harvard to attend business school, but then actually left HPS early to found her own business, a fintech company called LearnVest, focused on harnessing new technologies to help users build and monitor their financial plans. Her business received almost $75 million of venture capital funding and was eventually purchased by Northwest Mutual in 2015. She wrote her first book in 2013, Financially Fearless, followed up in 2019 with her second bestseller, Financially Forward, and in that same year launched Inspired Capital, an early-stage venture capital firm that she runs today. She is someone that we in senior leadership at HPS have the greatest respect for. So, without any further ado, I am very happy to welcome in this week's HPS Cast guest, Alexa Von Tobel, founder and managing partner of Inspired Capital. Alexa, welcome to the pod.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Alexa, I like to start from the very beginning, so let's go all the way back. Where are you from originally? Where'd you grow?
So, little known fact, I was born in Kentucky, grew up in Jacksonville my whole life. I really love that I'm from different parts of this country because I always feel like it gives me great perspective.
So tell me, Alexa, how did we get from Jacksonville to Harvard? How did we end up there undergrad?
Great question. I think I was in ninth grade when I said to my mom, I'm going to go to Harvard. My mom looked at me and was like, sounds great, kid. Nobody in my family had gone to any Ivy Leagues. At that point, both my brothers were actually applying or had gotten into Columbia University. And I kind of just decided I was going to work hard and do whatever it takes. And long story short, I got in and started with mind, brain, behavior, psychology, and then ultimately ended up writing my senior thesis on happiness and Bhutan, and spent a lot of time working in the happiness lab and positive psychology. So that tells you a lot right there about me. If you asked me what I was going to do as I entered college, I knew I was going to study business, but there was a moment mid-college where it like really clicked for me that I was an entrepreneur. I didn't know about the concept of an entrepreneur. And actually, in the rearview mirror, I come from a family of entrepreneurs, but my dad started his own practice. My grandfather started the Von Tobel Lumber Yards. In the rearview mirror, I'm like, oh, wow, no, actually all of them are very entrepreneurial. But it was sometime mid-college, kind of recognized this pattern in me where I loved building businesses. I helped start a magazine in college. I'd started a tutoring company. It just like was this like infectious itch that I had. I love the puzzle of building businesses and the problem solving of it. It just feels like I flow, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I went to Harvard undergrad as well, and I love our alma mater. I don't always think about it as the most entrepreneurial place, so there's obviously real exceptions to that, but that is something that clearly was in the water for you growing up. Okay, not that easy to start something right out of school. You end up going to Wall Street. You do a prop trading job at Morgan Stanley. What exactly were you doing, and what was the draw of that for your first employment?
Well, so I'd actually spent my summer at Insight Venture Partners, and they had offered me a job. And then Morgan Stanley actually offered to pay me even more money, a lot more money. And I just remember thinking, I got to pay for business school, and I don't want to take out any loans. So I should probably take this job at Morgan Stanley. And so I ended up on the prop desk, which was a very, very analytical job and actually something that I really enjoyed. I was helping trade CDOs and CLOs and CDO squareds and a bunch of very specific products. But nights and weekends when I was there, I actually founded LearnVest. I just started writing down the idea of what this business could be and started really dreaming about it. And finally, I had to go to HPS in the fall of 2008. And the idea that I had actually founded in 2007, I really started working on actively every day. And to your point, HPS, I always thought would be more entrepreneurial. And when I was there, I burst into tears because I was like, where's the track for people like me? None of this makes it possible for me to run a company because you couldn't miss school. You weren't allowed to miss a class. And I said, but I got to be in New York. And I just won this competition in Silicon Valley. I got to be there. And they were like, doesn't work. And I was like, well, I'm going to take a 5-year leave of absence.
How far along in HPS were you before you left, Alexa?
91 days, one semester, in good standing, passed all my tests, and then took a 5-year leave of absence.
And I think that call in hindsight was obvious and the right one for you. In the moment, how hard a decision was it? And were family and friends trying to talk you out of it?
So actually, this comes back to my psychology lab. And this is like a life-changing moment for me. And it really is, it gives you a prism into how I really do make decisions. When I was working in the psychology lab, there was this study about taking 90-year-olds and having them look back on their life. And actually, none of them regret anything they did. You don't regret the boy you kissed or the thing you did or the job you quit. You always regret what you don't do. So the big regrets are like the relationship you didn't mend, the person you didn't tell that you love, the swing you didn't take. And knowing that so clearly, I always joke that 90-year-old Alexa sits on my shoulder and she's a real tough cookie. The decision was clear. My own best friends actually sat me down and said, I think you're ruining your career. Like, you are so talented. You have this amazing trajectory. You have a perfect resume. What are you doing? And I remember laughing almost a little bit, being like, I just have to follow this very clear decision in my head. And so I walked out. I literally walked into the admissions office and said, I'm taking a 5-year leave of absence in good standing. They were wonderful. And I flew to New York, opened my laptop up the next day and didn't look back.
Starting a business, it's the American dream. I love hearing stories about this. You obviously had an entrepreneurial spirit, even if you didn't know the framework to think about that as a kid. What was it about LearnVest? So tell us about the idea when you were on your cocktail napkin that became the business plan. Like, what was the original idea you got excited about?
So very simply, when I was younger, I lost my dad when I was 14. And my mom overnight, really, really talented, very brilliant woman, very, very capable person, realized they split the workload. My mom kind of managed the day-to-day budget. My dad managed investments and big insurance decisions, et cetera, big financial decisions. And so my mom overnight had to like take over all of our finances. I just remember having this very clear moment where I was like, I'm going to be really good at my finances and I'm never going to be in a position where I have to learn a new skill while like going through a terrible tragedy, like just not going to happen. And so when I showed up at Harvard, I very nerdily was like looking for financial planning classes and there were none. And then I was just appalled by it. And I took like accounting at MIT and was always very good at math. And I was like, I can't believe that this like basic skill isn't taught anywhere. It just got under my skin and like really frustrated me. And then the more I started learning about it, I actually became appalled by the problem, which was that if you have money, you can get access to really great advisors. When you have money, lots of people want to help you with your money. But if you don't have money, there's no one to advise you because you don't have enough money to pay for the fees. And also the financial world is very unforgiving. You hurt your credit score. It's really hard. It takes 7+ years to actually really get to a place where you can have a clean slate. And I was like, this is just an injustice. And once that like really settled inside me, I was like, I'm going to go build something that makes this better. And that was what LearnVest was stood for. It was learn, earn, invest. Learn about money, earn it. You got to invest it. And it was the three pillars. And I literally couldn't look back.
Okay. So you get down to New York, you've got your laptop and an idea. Walk me through those early days to getting LearnVest off the ground.
I opened my laptop and I started working and it was just me. And I a little bit of savings that I put into the company. It was just no after no after no. And you know, in New York City, there were no angel funds except New York Angels, which gave me 25K, which like doesn't really get that far. There was no angel network that was real. The first investors were Series A investors and they wanted you to have revenue and traction. Fintech wasn't even a category. And I was building something and I really believed that iPhones and everything else was just going to bring transparency. I thought millennials would manage their money on their phones. And I was like, and there should be a modern day financial planning company that meets them where they are. And LearnVest was born.
Tell me about those early lessons learned. When I talk to entrepreneurs, you always learn so much in that first 6 months, 12 months, as you say, everybody's saying no. What do you take with you from that experience?
The best conversations were actually the most brutal ones. It was times where, and I always tell people, take your five smartest people in your life, go find them and pitch your idea to them, and then be quiet and say, please shred my idea, destroy it. What am I missing? What's not going to work? And so I think the biggest thing, if you're an entrepreneur, is you need to take feedback really well and actually embrace it. And not everyone's feedback is going to be right. So you have to get really good at knowing what advice to take and what advice to ignore.
And I think that's its own skill as well. It makes complete sense. Okay, so you are now a venture capitalist. You have taken in money from venture capitalists as you're growing your business. How did you make the decision with whom to partner? What was important to you besides just capital from people, you know, that you brought into your capital structure?
I always just looked to hire the brightest people, just literally the absolute smartest people you could get. And sometimes they didn't even have the skill set to do the role. And this is just a belief I've always had, which is if you just hire people with incredible octane and horsepower, who also are wonderful humans that you actually want to spend 20 hours a day with and probably even have fun spending 20 hours a day with, you're going to make great things happen. And I think one of the things that over time, I realized a big skill set of mine was just attracting the best and the brightest people. Being a really good, loyal teammate to people is a really important skill set.
Well, so then tell me about the growth of the business. You start taking in venture capital. As you say, people are coming on board that you know and you don't know. That transition from the one-man gang, you're sitting on the couch, to building out the team, the decision of what you can and can't delegate to different people is something founders struggle with the right balance on. Tell me about how you manage that growth and how you took on your responsibilities versus sharing the load with others.
I'm constantly like pretty tough on myself. And one day I was like, I think I should hire an executive coach. I've had coaches my whole life for everything I've done, whether it's gymnastics or volleyball or diving. And they've always made me better. And I've never been a CEO. And I should probably just hire a coach and be like, kick my butt, make me better, teach me what I need to know. So I hired one. And I remember coming home that night being like, I think I made a really bad decision. I was like, this coach wants to interview everybody in my life, including my husband, get feedback on me. And I was kind of like, shoot, I didn't ask for this. This is going to suck. I don't want to know all these things. It was just like a great moment where I got all the feedback and it was delivered in this really kind, like supportive way. And it was like, here's what you're great at. Here are the things that like are definitely not your strengths. So just start filling in people who are better at those. And so very quickly, just started hiring people that were significantly more experienced than me and just trusting them.
That's incredibly thoughtful. Okay, so you built the business. It's growing. You've had a great run. 2015, LearnVest is acquired by Northwestern Mutual. You have investors. They're going to want liquidity at some point, of course. But why was that the right time from the company's evolution perspective to pursue a sale?
So as I said, LearnVest was always like a very, very personal mission-oriented company that I was building. And the CEO, John Schlifsky, still the CEO, he came in to meet me the day before Thanksgiving. And I just had my Forbes cover and the company had just raised capital and we're starting to generate revenue. He came and sat down and was like, Alexa, like, I think we have the same value system. You know, Northwestern Mutual has been around for 160 at that point years. We care about stabilizing families. Your software is about stabilizing people with financial plans. What if we teamed up and we could take your software and bring it to the 5 million households that we already have access to? I built something that I was like, our whole job now is to share it with everybody. I also, by the way, was 9 months pregnant. So we sold on a Wednesday and I had my first child that weekend, which is, don't do that.
Wait, seriously? That was the timing?
Literally. Sold on March 25th, went into labor on March 29th. My daughter was born. Yeah.
Sold one baby and brought another one into the world. I mean, that's amazing, Alexa.
I mean, well, it was like the most stressful week of my entire existence. But no, I took my job really seriously. And I basically brought all the offers to the board and said, here's where we are and took it all the way to the finish line. I kind of didn't think about what my preference was until the night before, because my job was to get them all on the table and line them all up and make a decision. But it felt like the right thing to do. And actually, I ended up sharing that it was actually a Northwestern Mutual life insurance policy that stabilized my family when my dad passed away. And I didn't tell anybody that until after we all signed. And that I like was really emotional about it because I know exactly like the value of these policies and what they did for my own family. And it feels like this is my dad sending me like a second policy to take care of my grandkids.
Well, I mean, I have chills. Thank you, Alexa. That's an incredible story. And I love the, you know, the full circle aspect of that. Tell me, Alexa, so the deal happens and then you go to work for a couple of years for Northwestern Mutual. What was that like to go from a startup to then this bigger, you know, more corporate structure?
First of all, the CEO, John Shlipsky, is a really special guy, like really big thinker. He originally acquired us to sit on the side, and I was going to build out the New York tech office, and we were going to integrate the software. And very quickly, I think he appreciated and realized that he could actually even make more of the team. And so at one point, I joined the management team of Northwestern Mutual and became their global chief digital officer and became far more responsible for the entire tech platform of both companies. And we realized as we were integrating LearnVest that actually we should just merge the companies entirely. And it was kind of this incredible compliment that to this day, I am so grateful for how John, the CEO, thought. He was like, let's merge the businesses. And I was like, merge? One business is, you know, 6,000 employees doing $40 billion of revenue. Another one's like 200 employees in New York City building a software platform. And I learned about how do you make a successful merger happen, which is really about culture at its core. Strategy, there's this great quote, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And it's just so true. And I grew a lot as a person. He taught me an incredible amount.
So 2019, you leave to launch Inspired Capital. Let's start with the fundamentals. It was time to think about what you wanted to do next. Why a VC firm versus another startup versus even executive roles, given your experience? Why was that the right decision?
I knew I was just ready and like very thirsty for my next chapter. And I'm a builder in my core. And I had for the prior many years actively running in my own angel fund and investing and was responsible for Northwestern Mutual's venture fund. And basically realized that, number one, I want to build the venture fund that I wish existed for me. I also just had this vision that the New York tech ecosystem is going to explode over the next 30 years. I really do believe that. I love thinking of New York City as an underdog. And I just had this very clear vision of this early stage venture fund that is mighty and fierce and super, super ruthless about hard work and dedication to our founders. And literally, the word came out of my mouth. I was like, it's just Inspired. And I paused and I was like, is the URL taken? Can we get that?
Oh, it's insane that that wasn't taken and that worked.
It's insane that it wasn't taken.
Because I mean, having named companies or funds before in my life, it's impossible. Like everything's taken. Everything possibly could be taken. I can't believe you got that.
Literally that day was like, well, that's the name. There we go. Next. And I just had this very clear vision of how to build a really incredible firm. And then back to the people, because the people are everything. I have three partners. Penny Pritzker, who was former U.S. Secretary of Commerce, chairs the board of Harvard. And she's on the board of Microsoft. And
a force of nature.
I won't even name all the other things. My lifelong best friend, Lucy Dilland, who was a co-founder of Paperless Post, Harvard classmate, also Insight Venture Partners for years. And we just were each other's red phones building businesses in New York and the really gnarly problems that we both had to solve. And then Mark Batsian, who I sat next to for 14 years, who helped me build LearnVest. We sold it together. We just said we have this like very deep shared value of what we want to build. And the firm was just born. It was so easy. And we've written a 25-year business plan that took about 3 minutes to write because we were just so aligned in what we want to accomplish. And that's when business is easy.
Tell me about the mission. Early stage, you mentioned. What kinds of companies, like what is an Inspired Capital portfolio company?
So we are an early stage venture fund generalist. And if you said what makes an Inspired company, we literally do use the lens of like, could this be an iconic company that changes the world profoundly? So we look for big swings, big, multidimensional, complicated businesses that have the ability to create a new category, fundamentally disrupt a category. And I think one of the things that always was under my skin is there was always this comment like, oh, it's West Coast capital that backs big ideas and New York capital is more incrementalist. And I was like, well, not anymore. Inspired born and we're here to back the big swings. I backed a company of an incredible entrepreneur and it's, let's go build batteries that can power city grids. Big iconic companies that are complicated and hard and probably won't work. But if they do, they're going to change the world.
I love it. All right. So you started your career in the global financial crisis. Since that period, venture capital has had a real tailwind, right? It's zero interest rates, a world awash with liquidity. Things have gotten more complicated in the last year. How has that more volatile economic conditions impacted your business?
Yeah, great question. So go back to my roots. I literally built a business at the bottom of the worst recession in 81 years when there was no capital. That's all I know. The last 5 years was the world I didn't understand. This is the world we do understand. And truly, necessity is the mother of invention. Like, it breeds the best ideas. And so this is when things get fun. This is when the real builders come out. When those people come out and we look for them and we want to say, like, how do we get in your boat and row with you? It's changed our business in that we're back to extreme constraints, and we believe this environment lasts longer. And as a result, we're really prepared for it.
No, and as you say, having lived through it as you have is so crucial. It's the old, you know, Winston Churchill, never waste a good crisis, right? There's a lot to happen right now. Because it's timely and specific, I'm curious what your reaction was to Silicon Valley Bank's failure, what that means for the VC space and sort of the impact of that broadly.
Well, fundamentally, it's not great, right? Silicon Valley Bank was an incredible bank that provided debt and real liquidity to this ecosystem. And so, one, I'm grateful for all the people at Silicon Valley Bank that stayed and got their feedback up under them and continue to keep being a provider to this ecosystem. And to their credit, they are back in action. But any way you cut it, it was a provider of incredible support to the early stage venture ecosystem. And so the way that we think about it is debt is just going to be much harder to come by. And hopefully that gets better over time. But we almost took for granted the access to debt for businesses that were pre-revenue and all the other things that matter to building a business.
Makes complete sense. Well, listen, always a pleasure, Alexa, to hear what you're up to. Very exciting things ahead in your world, and we wish you great success with Inspired. With that, I would like to move to the last segment of the podcast, something we like to call Best Ideas, where we offer up something that's added value in our lives recently. Best Ideas, because it's our goal as investors to always maximize exposure to those. Alexa, you're our guest. I'm going to ask you to go first. What is your best idea this week?
Well, I'm going to share something that my husband and I do that I just think is, if anyone out there is a parent, it's a great thing, which is we'd set up these email addresses for our kids and we send them notes very regularly. Our kids are really little, 4, 5, and 8. We basically have created this chamber to give them, and I don't know what age we'll give it to them, whether they're 14, 17, 18, where we've been like, not only just documenting little moments of their life, but also moments where we're so proud of something that they did or a decision that they made. And we want to like give them this really detailed, almost autobiographical insight to who they are and how they're developing. It's easy. And I'm always working and on the go and in motion, but you can send a 2-sentence email to your child and give it to them when they're old enough to really receive it. And it feels like something I just would be so thrilled if my parents had done for me. So that's one quick idea. And then another thing is, I really think that we've relearned how to function coming out of COVID. The other just thing I will say is we've been in an office 5 days a week, and I am so delighted being in person with the people that I work with, the energy that I get. And that's just another thing I will say, I believe more and more companies are returning back to the office more normally and more like 4 to 5 days a week. I just want to be a proponent as someone who's now been doing it for a few years again. I love it. And I just wanted to pay that tip forward.
I love both of those. And I will say on the latter point, you have talked very thoughtfully about firm culture. And I think culture is a exhaustible resource. Like, we monetized that in 2020 when we're all away from each other. You need to be together to sort of maintain that. And I think that having people around and the mentorship and the informal conversations, there's just a lot in that that really matters. I couldn't agree more. So Alexa, for mine, as people know, I like to be inspired by the guests of the week. Alexa, as we've discussed, left Harvard Business School early to pursue entrepreneurial ambitions, a very good decision, as it turns out. I mean, that got me thinking about some other famous Harvard students who took a similar path. And I landed on a movie for my best idea this week. We've mentioned it today, and as I mentioned on the pod before, I have 3 teenage children. And we're working our way through some of my favorite films to make sure they're appropriately culturally literate. So my best idea this week is one that I recently rewatched. It's a David Fincher classic telling the story of a young Harvard student dropping out to create a digital business. Of course, I'm talking about the movie The Social Network. The movie came out in 2010, and it tells the story of the founding of Facebook and the litigation between Zuckerberg and the Winklevoss twins, as well as Facebook co-founder Eduardo Saverin. Fincher is one of my favorite directors, and he's really at his best here. You can talk about Fight Club or Seven or Gone Girl. They're all amazing movies. I think this is his best work. You know the story, but he brings it to life with remarkable performances with Jesse Eisenberg, Armie Hammer, Andrew Garfield. It's a great watch, and I highly recommend revisiting it, even if you've seen it before. Though I will say it's funny, at the end, like the big reveal at the end is that Facebook had 500 million members or users at the time, which is a funny dated stat. But anyway, in honor then of a woman who, in the same vein as legends like Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg, dropped out of Harvard to start a tech business, let me recommend the film Social Network, streaming now. Alexa, did you ever watch that one?
Of course. Mark was my classmate, and the Winklevoss brothers' parents are our neighbors. Anyways, I watched it, and we know many of the characters. It's such a fun movie, too. It's an incredibly fun movie to watch.
It's really well done. With that, it's time to wrap it up for the week. Alexa, fascinating to hear what you're up to. Here's to many successes with Inspired Capital to come, and thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor. This has been an absolute blast.
Thanks again to our guest, Alexa Von Tobel. Check out our show notes to learn more about Alexa and her venture capital firm, Inspired Capital. You'll also find a link to my best idea, the blockbuster 2010 film, The Social Network, directed by David Fincher, now available to stream on most platforms. This podcast was brought to you by At Will Media with HPS Investment Partners. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. The opinions expressed on this podcast are that of the host, Colbert Cannon, and the guest of each episode, and do not necessarily reflect the views of HPS Investment Partners.